Welcome back to episode 2 of Digital Natives and Modern Military. I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today, we're going to get into talking about new capabilities. You need a pool of digital natives. How do you get them? And you could also consider some of the resources that are already available. We're going to get into talking about trapped capacity. There are many people both within the military and in the private sector that have experience. There's all kinds of resources that can be available if you can unleash the skill sets and the training in order to do that. Joining me again today is General Sir James Everard, who is a former senior British Army officer who is perhaps most well known as former Deputy Supreme Allied Commander for NATO, and Caleb Walker, who is a former Lieutenant Colonel who served for 20 years in the Canadian Armed Forces, including 3 tours of Afghanistan, and he also wrote the CAF Digital Strategy. Caleb is now the Global Vice President for Defense for With You, With Me. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
So we're talking about new capabilities. We're trying to get into talking a little more about the challenges that militaries face across the West in engaging digital natives, with particular focus on the future fight and the need for militaries to build their digital armies. We can see a lot of examples of that right now going on in the world. Why don't we start with you, James? What do you think the challenges are, and how do you think we build those new pools for digital natives?
Well, I think, you know, we are learning to fight differently. And so the challenge is already here. It's not a question of preparing people for the future. You know, we need these people now. If you were to look at what NATO is now trying to do in terms of its presence on the eastern, flank, this is, you know, demonstrating an absolute capability to defend and control geographic areas and multiple domains simultaneously. And within that, it's got, you know, non-traditional command and control. It's got, you know, operational strategic joint FARs, you know, capabilities, you know, underpinned by advanced computing networking, all the things that you see in a modern army. And the oil in the engine there is human capacity of a type that understands how this stuff works, and therefore that takes you to digital natives. And it's going to grow because, of course, you know, we all look to the future, multi-domain operations, multi-domain command and control with a sort of digital spine off which we can all operate. And that will, again, will need more digital talent. So, you know, the challenge is here and now. It also is going to grow in the future. So we need to get on with it.
James, technology is just growing so fast. And I mean, even through this horrible COVID virus, there's been a lot of innovation. Do you think the lack of digital talent is hurting the military now? And is it going to hurt even more in the future if we don't do something about it?
I think I made the point. I think it inevitably is. I mean, you're always going to need, you know, men and women to close with and engage with the enemy. And they do not require much digital support. They do perhaps to get them to the battle, to logistically supply them. But elsewhere in headquarters these days, it is already a digital fight. And, you know, if you haven't got the depth of capability, then you are going to be second best. And I think in the fights of today, you simply can't afford that to be the case.
Caleb, how do you see it?
Yeah, it's Gartner actually came up with a study just recently where it said that 80% of all automation and digital solutions are going to be built by people that are not part of the IT shop by 2024. What does that mean? Is that outside the IT shop, everybody that's out there doing the business that knows the business process and knows the pain points and what needs to be automated and what needs to be fixed are going to be building their own solutions. And this is one, because the IT department's not going to have enough horsepower to drive it themselves. They're going to be so busy with business as usual and protecting the spine and making sure that the architecture is created properly. And they're going to be trying to set the conditions so that the rest of the business can build 80% of all the solutions. And so you're essentially going to have to upskill everybody so that they can go and build these solutions themselves. Otherwise, they're going to get weighed down by all the information, all the administration, all the inefficiencies that they have to live with. So either they are able to build those solutions themselves so that they can drive efficiencies, they can make themselves more productive, they can free themselves out of data input or whatever else, et cetera, that I'm sure people are hampered out there. Or if they don't, then they're going to be kind of caught behind. And so that's why it's so important to enable the people that understand the business to automate and bring digital solutions to the business as we go forward over the next couple of years.
Caleb, as I came into the intro, we were talking about trap capacity. It's kind of a new term for me. And as I understand it, it's the capability that a person may have or a skill that has not quite been developed. So I'm wondering, one of the career paths and ways to build the digital native pool, there's tons of people who've had careers privately and within the military that could probably transition their skills and experience over into this area. Can you comment on that a little bit? Is it like just gold waiting to be mined?
Well, yes, John. I mean, I've had an opportunity to see quite a few of these examples happen where you bring in somebody that understands the business and you give them a bit of technology training and they're able to be far more efficient and effective. And so, you know, traditionally, my favorite example actually is that traditionally we would look at certain ranks and certain trades as like maybe not that technical, but what we did is we upskilled about four young privates on how to use digital and data visualizations properly. And traditionally, most headquarters, particularly strategic headquarters, the person that goes for information and data is like the lieutenant colonels and majors. Well, they'll go chase down information and numbers and they'll put it into a PowerPoint slide and then they'll present that data. But we tried to see if there was a capacity to upskill young people to do it. And even though they only understand the business a little bit, but they're able to create the visualizations, if that would work. And so, long story short, it did. Essentially, the general was able to come out of their office every couple hours and throw out an idea like, hey, can you track down how many leave days the entire organization has, or how many, how much funding do we have the rest over? What's the burn rate? The young people were actually able to go and chase down that information, and they had the capacity to do that quite easily. And then more importantly, it opened up the trap capacity of the lieutenant colonels and majors who didn't spend 75% of their time filling in Excel spreadsheets and PowerPoints, but they were actually starting to do some of the deeper thinking and strategy and operational planning that we really need those people to be doing, hence why they have a couple of master's degrees usually. And so that's kind of how I would look at that trap capacity in that sense. It's just like enabling people to do more than we would expect, and that would free up people that are burdened with things that they shouldn't be doing.
That makes sense. James, I think if we're able to retrain people who have experience in other areas and other skills and move it over onto the digital side, it's going to reduce time and costs. How do you feel about that?
I think you're absolutely right. And we were talking, I think, in an earlier episode about how do you entice people into the armed forces these days. And of course, you know, people join at a young age, their priorities change. You know, do we want them to leave after 10 years because they want to put down roots and do no, you don't. You want to keep that knowledge and use it for your own benefit. And again, this talking about examples. And if you're going into a fight, you know, you want people who are supporting you, understand the nature of the business, you know, not just pilots and artillerymen, but also those in the digital space. And I think there's a real opportunity. And I'm not saying it's easy because these are posts that perhaps don't even exist at the moment. They need to be funded and created. But there's such an opportunity to give people a career path from 20 through to 60 in the armed forces where they may change role and function two or three times, and yet feel fulfilled throughout the whole of that career in a way that grows them, as opposed to diminishes them, you know, as they leave to go and do some other job.
To feed into that as well, like there's certain trades that you don't want them to be in the military for 30 years. Like you don't want to, like, I'm not going to name them, but there's a physically demanding roles out there where you don't want them to do it for 20 years, and maybe you only want them to do about for 7 years. But instead of expecting that natural attrition to happen and the person leaves the military altogether, then maybe if they would be moved into roles where you actually want that person to stay for 20 years. And so it's like inevitably, maybe, you know, at the infantry, you don't want to have a you want a certain young amount of people in that trade, but instead of having them leave the force entirely, just based on the attrition that you would expect, in that you would want to them to have the ability to move into these positions and posts that maybe don't exist yet, but would be made a lot better if they had the security mindset that infantry soldier had over 7 years, and the understanding of the institution, instead of having to bring in net new talent that doesn't have that.
So I think, you know, if you want to keep people and retrain them and retain them, you've got to, it comes back to what you said in an earlier episode too. There's got to be opportunity. There's got to be training. There's got to be education. I would imagine, James, as well, that the digital insurgency gives an opportunity for empowerment and a little bit of control over your career path. Would you agree with that?
I don't think it has in the past. I think in the future, it's something what, you know, our young men and women want to have is more control over their career path. You know, and this isn't easy. I mean, in the British system, we've talked about flexible working for many years. And yet when you drill into it, you find very few people are actually flexibly working because it's just difficult. And yet I just don't think we've given it the time and the effort, or now come under the pressure we are under in terms of the digital space. And so we need a solution. And, you know, as I said in an earlier thing, you know, there isn't a silver bullet out there. It's up to us to make it work. And I think recycling the talent that we have, upskilling the talent that we have, is probably more than 60% of the solution.
It's interesting because, you know, technology and digital now play such a role. I mean, they can disrupt an entire way of doing business or of operating. It affects everything. As I think we've mentioned too, it's a big threat, it's a big opportunity, and it's a tool. We've got a growing demand for cyber, and we need to recruit more people. Yet on the other hand, we've got 25% of all soldiers leaving with a medical release. The number one reason for retirement is postings and family restrictions. Remote work is something that's coming fast on the horizon to create opportunities for new engagement. When it comes to cyber, it's not just about the computer degree. I think there's more to it than that. And Caleb, how would you suggest that we recruit more talent on the cyber side?
Yeah, so it's complex, but I guess a couple of examples of this would be that typically a lot of different organizations, particularly government organizations, try and hire out of university through internships from the computer science degrees and expect that their cybersecurity operations centers or their penetration teams, their cyber penetration teams, that the university students will want to do that long term. But what they always see is that the personality of the university student that's just finished doing creating stuff for 4 years while in the university, they don't want to do a long-term role in a more of a process-focused, security-focused organization. They want to go work for a big company to make lots of money and kind of go build something. And so Like there's one thing that we know from security people that are like they like that space, and especially if they've been doing it for half a decade or a decade, is that they want to do more of that probably. And so we should be upskilling those people that have the right personality to do that role long term, and bringing them in. So that's kind of where I would say that would be the initial way to look at that. Does that make sense, John?
It does. On the other hand, James, if you've got people who already understand the defense landscape, I mean, cybersecurity is a skill. They can be trained. That would be a pretty good speed to market approach if you could work with the people who want to move into those areas of employment, no?
I think you're right. And I also think about pairing, you know, this idea that you need people who are wise and older, who understand the playbook of your adversaries. They might not be very technically, you know, good, but they're paired with a young individual who is technically good. And you'd be amazed by the difference. I mean, you know, that pairing becomes a very powerful tool. And Caleb's right. I mean, you know, we live in a world now where we shouldn't expect these young people to commit to us forever, you know. But I think what they do in the military or in support of national resilience is quite exciting. It is quite cutting edge in many places. And we have seen a pattern, I know, of people serving for a while, leaving to go and do something perhaps with a big international, you know, organization, and then actually coming back in 3 or 4 years later because, you know, they have missed the excitement, the cut and thrust, and often the cutting edge technology which they are using in the armed forces.
I'm J. Richard Jones, and you're listening to a very special podcast series, episode number 2. It's called Digital Natives and the Modern Military, and we've been talking today about new capabilities and the requirement of new pools of digital natives. It's based around the future fight and the need for militaries to build out their digital armies. Our special guests today have been General Sir James Everard and Caleb Walker. Gentlemen, I really want to thank you for joining us today.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
And once again, I want to remind our listenership that they can follow Sir James and Caleb on LinkedIn, and they're both very active. And please join us next time as we tackle episode number 3, which will be making service life appealing, inspiring through service, and the different ways that you can serve. Once again, gentlemen, thank you very much.
The views, information, or opinions expressed during the Vanguard Weekly Podcast Series, CGE Weekly Podcast Series, Vanguard Radio Podcast, and CGE Radio Podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not represent those of Vanguard or any affiliated media products, their employees, or owners. Vanguard Magazine, Canadian Government Executive Magazine, and its affiliates are not responsible for and do not verify for accuracy any of the information contained in this podcast series. This podcast may not be copied or distributed without express written approval of Promotive Communications, Inc., PCI. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute this podcast without consent from PCI. PCI assumes no liability for activities in connection with this podcast or for use of this podcast with any other website, computer, or playing device.